The unicorns. What did the French monk tell me? Strength, they meant. Virginal strength. A rushing, lasting, tiring strength. That is from W.B. Yeats' The Star and the Unicorn. Hello and welcome to another episode of Occult Lives, where this time the subject is the unicorn. A monosaurus is a beast with one horn. Also known as the unicorn, it is one of the mythical beasts that appears in many ancient tales from many cultures. The equine beast with the horn protruding from its forehead. Fabulous, graceful, pure. Just some of the words that come to mind about such a beast. It comes, according to artwork over the centuries, in many sizes, from rhinoceros to baby goat-like, and usually was white in colour. There are many writers who have written about the unicorn, from Aristotle to Pliny. They discuss the beast, all with varying stories from different lands. But out of all the writings, none seem consistent in a description, let alone a virtue of this beast. Some art depicted the unicorn more like a goat with cloven hooves, whereas others gave it more equine features. The horn size differs on all. Some gave long, thin, tapering horns that grew from the forehead, whereas other artists gave a short, thicker horn that when removed could be used as a goblet to drink from. This was another myth about the beast. The horn was magical, having healing properties. The horn of a unicorn is often regarded as a prophylactic, that is, it can prevent disease. The unicorn is regarded as a protector, and one of its many attributes is that it is also able to detect poison. Some books say that the unicorn starts to sweat as soon as it is near poison. Other books say that it is the horn that detects the poison, and that is why the horn as a goblet was a much sought-after object to have, because it could detect poison in anyone's drink. How it detects poison is not known. Does the liquid fizz up? Does the horn goblet start to sweat? Perhaps it changes colour. The legends of the unicorn state that this is a beast who clears stagnant water or any water that has had poisons added to it. It does this with its horn, approaching the water's edge, then dipping its horn into the liquid. Whether it sucks up the poisons into its horn, or its horn emanates a cleansing property, is not clear. In some tales, the horn is said to have a precious stone at the base of it, where the forehead is, and that this was one of the reasons why it was so sought after, for the unicorn purity and that precious stone in its forehead. There are many early myths about unicorns. In the Old Testament, the unicorn comes across as a strong, powerful beast, usually mentioned as a creature able to anoint holiness or direct one to holiness with its horn. But in some old Jewish tales, the unicorn is portrayed as a menacing beast out to scare and to punish the faithless. When the first man Adam lived in the gardens of Eden, God blessed him with a special task to name the animals. Adam's first animal to give a name to was, apparently, the unicorn. Noah himself had taken the beast on board of the ark. In the Talmud, it has it that the unicorn arrived late, so was tied to the back of the boat by its horn and was dragged along. Another story I heard was that it arrived too late to board and thus was drowned in the flood. In China, the unicorn was called the Kai Lin, and its picture was the emperor's emblem. If a unicorn was to be seen during a reign, it forecast good tidings. There are four beasts particularly special to Chinese mythology: the phoenix, turtle, dragon, and the unicorn. In my research on the beast, I have read that in ancient Chinese lore, they expect a unicorn to come back one day. This unicorn, when it arrives, will transform into a man, the most supreme of humankind. There will be none like him, for he will be divine. I'm hoping that when he does arrive, he will set things aright in the world, then change back into a unicorn. The Chinese did not regard the unicorn as being native to their land, that it came from far off in another land, Tibet maybe. There are many reports of unicorns being seen in Tibet throughout the ages. Even amongst the reports of some of the early Western visits to that land in the late 1800s and early 1900s, where it was said to wander the remoteness of the roof of the world. During medieval times, books known as bestiaries were the encyclopedias of their day. The writers and artists were monks, and few of them actually saw the beasts they depicted, which could explain the fantastic descriptions such as horses with horns and other fabulous beasts such as griffins. They were collecting these descriptions of them from hearsay and other travellers. In some old grimoires, the unicorn is seen as an ingredient for a recipe. For example, ground unicorn horn is needed in some healing spells. St. Hildegard of Bingen has an instruction which entails what to do with a unicorn's liver to make it into a healing ointment. Shoes made from unicorn hide were meant to ensure healthy legs and feet. Where did she get such methods, and did she ever try it out herself? Where would she have got hold of a unicorn pelt? Regarded as the fastest animal on land, it is said to be a strong, magnificent beast, yet gentle. It was not easy to approach and was regarded as a shy beast, wary of others, so was often thought of as a solitary animal that rarely went near humans. In some tales, it is only virgins that the unicorn will approach, so a trap would be set with men and dogs lying in wait, whilst the virgin sat in a clearing awaiting the unicorn to approach. Unicorns are attracted to purity, so a virgin would be a draw. Once the unicorn has been smitten by the maiden's chastity, it will fall asleep in her lap. Then the maiden signals the hunters who come and capture or kill it, depending on which story one reads. If the hunters captured it, they usually took it to their king. What did a king do with it depends on what story you read. If the hunters were to try to deceive a unicorn with a maiden who is not chaste, then they soon discover their trick will not work. The unicorn knows chastity, and a fake virgin usually gets run through with the horn. How does the unicorn know if the maiden is a virgin or not? Apparently, virgins give off a specific scent which unicorns can smell. In some French tales, the unicorn is actually the evil character and has to be overcome by the good. In this case, the evil unicorn is bewitched by the good virgin, so pure that she is godly. And so the unicorn's evil ways are overcome, and the unicorn lays his head down in her lap in submission, evil submitting to good. The Lady and the Unicorn is a set of six tapestries currently in the Cluny Museum in Paris. They were made in the early 1500s. And are said to depict the senses, taste, touch, sight, smell and sound in their six pictures. This set of tapestries was made for Jean le Viste of Lyon. The fabulous colours are still quite vibrant, even though they have faded over the years. These tapestries are full of symbolism and imagery. The lion and the unicorn are in awe, a special pair with many connotations other than just being wild beasts. The lion is the sun, the unicorn the moon. The lion is of the day, whilst the unicorn is of the night. The lion is also represented by the oak tree, usually portrayed beside or behind the lion, whilst the unicorn has the holly as its tree. The tapestry for sight depicts a lady in the centre of the picture with the unicorn lying to one side of her, looking into a mirror that she holds. The unicorn is staring at its reflections, its front legs on her lap. The lion sits on the other side, holding a flagpole that has the heraldic emblem for the Le Viste family. Sound is the next one. There are two ladies playing a musical organ that is centre stage. The unicorn lies in the grass amongst the flowers on one side of the lady, whilst the lion sits on the other side of the other lady, still holding the flagpole. Taste comes next. The two ladies again, but this time the lady in waiting is kneeling whilst holding forth a bowl of water for the lady of the piece to touch with one hand. In the other hand sits a parrot-like bird. The lion and the unicorn are both standing on their hind legs, wearing capes and holding flags of the owner's pennant. Smell is the fourth tapestry. The lady is taking flowers from a basket that the lady in waiting holds forth. This time, the lion and the unicorn are sat on their hind legs, with their front legs raised so that they can hold the flagpole and banner. This time they have a shield each on their backs. Touch is the last of the senses pictures. The lady stands centrepiece and she holds the flagpole in one hand, the horn of the unicorn in the other. The unicorn in this picture is smaller than in the others and stands to her side. It is wearing the shield. The lion on the other side is also shielded and seated. There is a sixth picture. The lady stands before a tent. A lady-in-waiting holds open a treasure chest. The lion and the unicorn are sat in hind legs, holding their flags. This last picture represents Jean le Viste of Lyon's code of honour, to renounce all passions and desires. There is a rumour that there is only ever one unicorn at any time. So was it a solitary beast? Marco Polo reports seeing herds of them walking with elephants. Prester John had a herd, according to visitor reports of him, out in his magical kingdom in the Far East. But then again, did Prester John exist? He was said to be a magi who ran a peaceful empire in the East. Even Julius Caesar reports seeing herds of them on his conquering travels, so they were around in Roman times. The connection of Jesus to the unicorn is because there is only ever supposed to be one of them. There is apparently only one Christ and only one unicorn to walk the earth at any time. And maybe this is the secret to the symbolism of the next set of tapestries I'm about to describe. A few years ago, I was lucky enough to visit the Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York City, where in the cloisters hang another set of tapestries with the unicorn as the subject, and they are aptly entitled the Unicorn Tapestries. These 15th century pieces of European art again have some mystery as to their origins. They belong to the Rockefeller family for some generations. Rockefeller bought them in the early 1920s and donated them to the museum. The tapestries are a set of six, though they're only parts of number five. Each is full of naturalistic scenery, intricately woven flowers, trees and grasses which can all be identified. The first scene is the beginning of the woods, with the hunters and the dogs preparing to enter them. The second tapestry has the unicorn knelt before a fountain. Birds and other wild animals are about it, but in the woodland behind and around are the hunters and their dogs, watching their prey. The third tapestry is known as the Unicorn Crosses the River and has the huntsmen and dogs chasing down the unicorn. It has come to a river and is crossing only to discover there are other hunters and dogs awaiting it on the other side. The fourth tapestry is known as the Unicorn Defends Itself and has the unicorn centre stage on its front legs, back legs kicking out behind at a hunter who is aping a spear at it. The unicorn is attacking a dog that is before it, spearing it with its horn as if it were a lance. The other hunters and dogs are coming into the affray. The fifth tapestry has only two parts of it left. The main section of it is missing. The unicorn's head and back can be seen, gazing up to what would be the centre of the picture, which is missing. It is assumed that it is a maiden who has captured it, for the unicorn is in a lounging position. A handmaiden stands behind the unicorn with what I think is a pleased face at the horror she is witnessing as two dogs bite at the unicorn's back. The unicorn is too entranced in whatever is in the middle section to notice the dog's assault. The sixth tapestry depicts two scenes in one picture. In the top left-hand corner is the unicorn being slain by the hunters with their spears and the dogs. The rest of the scene has the huntsman returning to the castle with a horse centre stage, the slain unicorn slung across its back. The huntsmen are bringing it to a couple dressed in finery. Behind them are other well-to-do ladies and gents, and a castle sits in the background. The unicorn is dead. The last tapestry is a woodland scene with a circular fence within which grows a pomegranate tree, and there sits a living unicorn. The beast is relaxed, looking magnificent, wearing an expensive-looking collar. The unicorn is at peace, resurrected. During the 1500s, there was a flurry of paintings and portraits of ladies, usually seated, carrying a small unicorn in their arms to symbolise purity, theirs presumably. One such picture is by the artist Raphael, who has put a small unicorn with a fleece-like coat in the arms of a bride-to-be. The painting is known as The Lady with a Unicorn, and in the last few decades it has been x-rayed, and it shows that Raphael was originally to place a small dog in her arms. The Unicorn in Heraldry. The unicorn was often seen in coats of arms. Scotland displayed it originally, whilst England had the lion, and they were often depicted as fighting, just like in this old nursery rhyme. The lion and the unicorn were fighting for the crown. The lion chased the unicorn all around the town. Some gave them white bread, some gave them brown. Some gave them plum cake and drummed them out of town. It was not until the Scottish King James took over the throne of Elizabeth, uniting Scotland and England under one king, that the unicorn and lion became united in heraldry. James took his Scottish unicorn and placed it with Liz's lion on the United Lands pennant. Apparently, Elizabeth did have a unicorn horn that came into her possession in around 1577, and it was kept at the Tower. I wonder if our Liz ever showed it to our fave, John Dee. Some years ago, I was working with an artist on a small book of the unicorn, and we were lucky enough to be taken down into the vaults of the British Museum to view their collection of unicorn horns. We were shown various horns of differing sizes and shades of white. The horns had now all been identified to other creatures, such as narwhal, antelope. One horn was long and thick, and it could be seen that it had originally been two horns twisted together, presumably when the goat was young, so that the owner could then sell it to some gullible Westerner as a unicorn horn. The curator passed me a glass jar containing, according to the label on the front, powdered unicorn horn. My eyes widened, my jaw dropped, and the curator told me with a smirk, it was a ground-up mixture of dog and human teeth. In esoteric circles, the unicorn may well have been a symbol for an enlightened one, a man or a woman who's been able to open and operate their third eye, just like the snake rising from Pharaoh's forehead in ancient Egypt was displaying the awakened kundalini of the king. These people would have found a path to dedicate themselves to. They would have discovered a teaching, maybe with a guru, maybe by themselves, and followed it through its many trials and tribulations till they reached their ultimate illuminating goal. According to T.H. White in The Once and Future King, one must not look into the unicorn's eyes, because its stare will make you lose all emotions except for love, an unexplainable love, because it is the highest love of all. Maybe, methinks, everybody needs to have a look into those unicorn eyes. So is the unicorn a fable or an extinct beast, or just a secret symbol for enlightenment? In Lewis Carroll's Alice Through the Looking Glass, the unicorn is having a bit of a tussle with the lion. During a break in the brawl, the unicorn passes by the crowd, walking on his back legs with his hands in his pockets, when he spots Alice. He's amazed to see her. Alice is with Haeger, one of the king's messengers, who explains to the unicorn that she is a child. The unicorn has never seen a child and had believed them to be fabulous creatures, which Alice replies with that she was sure unicorns were fabulous creatures too. They both decide to now believe in the other, since they have seen the other with their own eyes. Does the fact that there are no reported sightings of unicorns mean they don't actually exist? For an apparent mythical creature, there is a lot of serious literature on the subject. In the mid-1600s, the philosopher Gottfried Leibniz was shown a unicorn skeleton that had apparently been discovered in the German wilderness. It had two legs at the front and a long tail to balance it at the back from the long horn at the front. It was later debunked as a fake that Leibniz had fallen for, possibly a hoax put together from other dinosaur bones. Like me, like a unicorn, in solitude roam. This is from a hymn of the Buddha. All you have heard has been looked up and researched by myself, but you can find out more on unicorns in books, the web, talking and libraries. Thanks for listening, and until next time, peace and out.